content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Pat Perry for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Money Matters. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. Today's stories include: investors bought a record share of homes in 2021, and Kmart is down to its last four stores in the U.S. Last year, investors bought nearly one in seven homes sold in America's top metropolitan areas, the most in at least two decades, according to the realty company Redfin. Those purchases come at a time when would-be buyers across the country are seeing wildly escalating prices, raising the question of what impact investors are having on prices for everyone else. Investors were even more aggressive in the final 3 months of the year, buying 15% of all homes that sold in the 40 markets. Real estate investors can be large corporations, local companies, or wealthy individuals, and they generally don't live in the properties they are buying. Some look to flip homes to new buyers, while others rent them out. Neighborhoods where a majority of residents are black have been heavily targeted, according to Washington Post analysis of Redfin data. Last year, 30% of home sales in majority black neighborhoods were to investors, compared with 12% in other zip codes, the Post analysis shows. We know historically that places where minorities live are undervalued or lower priced, Redfin's Shahar Bohara said. That, he said, makes them more attractive to investors, driving up prices for residents. The effect of investor activity differs city to city. Regions with the highest share of investor purchases are in the South, stretching from Florida to Arizona, with a quarter of all home sales in Atlanta and Charlotte last year going to investors. But some of the most targeted zip codes overall are in the Rust Belt, especially heavily minority neighborhoods in Detroit and Cleveland. The growing number of investor purchases has drawn increasing scrutiny from Democratic lawmakers on Capitol Hill, particularly as buyers target minority neighborhoods. One of the reasons housing prices have gotten so out of control is that corporate America sensed an opportunity, said Senator Sherrod Brown, Democrat, Ohio, last week at a hearing of the Senate Committee on Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, a panel he chairs. Brown took direct aim at private equity firms and corporate landlords in particular. They bought up properties, they raised rents, they cut services, they priced out family home buyers, and they forced renters out of their homes, he said. Investors have been snapping up homes in and around downtown Cleveland at a staggering rate, putting three of the city's zip codes among the top 15 nationally in the rate of investor purchases last year. Sally Accorti Martin, the former longtime housing director for South Euclid, a small city east of Cleveland, testified at the hearing that a majority of the city's roughly 1,600 rental units are now owned by companies from other states, and that tenants have suffered as a result. Martin said the city passed a series of ordinances aimed at stopping predatory behavior to limited effect. One provision called Pay to Stay allowed tenants to pay any unpaid rent and fees up until their eviction hearing. Unlike mom-and-pop landlords, large out-of-state investors typically don't have much empathy for their tenants, she said. Residents can be a day late in paying rent and face an eviction notice. In other cases, investors buy properties that might otherwise be the first home purchases for families looking to accrue wealth that they can pass down to their children or grandchildren. A lower home ownership rate among minorities has contributed to a much lower rate of wealth accumulation. There's a massive racial home ownership gap in this country, which is a serious problem because owning a home is a key to building intergenerational wealth and reducing racial inequality overall, Senator Robert Menendez, Democrat, New Jersey, said. In the hearing, Democrats as well as Republicans on the committee, led by Senator Patrick Toomey, Republican from Pennsylvania, raised concerns about an underlying problem, the stringent zoning rules in many cities that prevent more homes from being built. Bokhari from Redfin echoed that concern in discussing his research. In the shortage that comes from too few homes being built, he said there is profit to be made. If we were building enough housing, there wouldn't be as much investing activity in the housing we have, he said. If we had enough homes to meet this demand, he added, everyone would be able to buy a home. How the Post calculated the data. The paper analyzed zip code level data provided by Redfin. Redfin defined investors as buyers whose names included the keywords LLC, Inc., Corp., or Homes, or whose ownership code includes the keywords Association, Corporate Trustee, Company, Joint Venture, or Corporate Trust. For our analysis, Redfin excluded the buyer keywords trust from its analysis to be more conservative in its findings, since some families own their homes through trust. Redfin included the 40 most populous metros where counties disclose sale prices. Redfin's metro boundaries are either metropolitan statistical areas or metropolitan divisions, depending on the metro. The Post excluded zip codes with fewer than 10 sales in 2021 from the map, and those with fewer than 25 sales from the race and income analyses. Race and income data is from the U.S. Census Bureau. Next, new retailers announced for Carey's Fenton development. Carey's burgeoning Fenton Complex, a 69-acre mixed-use development on Carytown Boulevard between I-40 and Maynard Road, has added two retailers and an office tenant to its lineup of future occupants. Women's clothing boutique, Altered State, will open a 6,800-square-foot store featuring its line of boho chic apparel and footwear. The company's mid-size and plus-size brand, Arula, will open a separate 1,700-square-foot storefront with a curated collection of clothes size 10 to 24. Fenton's retail mix sets the tone for the entire project, and we're pleased to welcome a fast-growing top-tier clothing boutique to the community, said Paul Zarian, managing director at Hines, the retail firm overseeing Fenton's development. Compass, the country's largest independent real estate brokerage, will occupy 8,260 square feet at the offices at Fenton. The firm is Fenton's first office tenant and will likely open in the fall. We're thrilled to provide an inspiring next-generation workspace for Compass to grow its Triangle area presence, Zarian said, and look forward to bringing additional office users to the project this year. With nearly 345,000 square feet of expected shopping, dining, and entertainment space. Fenton is one of the largest retail-driven projects under development in the country and the largest in Cary's history, according to Cary Mayor Harold Weinbrick. Its first section is scheduled to open on April 1st. The $850 million complex will feature several high-end retailers. Culinary options will include Scout Crawford's Crawford Brothers Steakhouse, Steve Palmer's Coletta Italian Restaurant, Michael Lee's M Sushi, Ford Fry's Superica Tex-Mex Cuisine, and local favorite Dram and Draught, a whiskey bar and tap room. Fenton will host the Triangle's largest sports bar, the 22,000-square-foot CRU food and wine bar, and sports and social. I think Fenton is going to be very unique, Weinbrick said. With people living there, shopping there, doing business there, I think it will be the place to be. Next, Black-owned businesses make up just 4% of Raleigh economy. There is no metro area in the U.S. where the share of Black-owned firms with employees matches the Black population there. That gap is creating significant wealth inequities across America and causing communities to miss out on tens of thousands of jobs, according to a new study from the Brookings Institution, a Washington, D.C.-based think tank. In Raleigh, just 4% of employer firms are Black-owned, or around 1,061 businesses, the study says. For Black businesses to make up 21.6% of employer firms, a rate equivalent to the Black proportion of the population, the Raleigh metro area would need an additional 6,393 Black businesses, the study estimates. If it could reach that number of Black businesses, the report said, the city could potentially see 11,560 new jobs. Before the pandemic, the national median net worth of white families was $188,200, while the median net worth of Black families sat at $24,100, according to the Federal Reserve. The lack of assets makes it much more difficult for Black families to form businesses or get loans. But a Black business owner is typically 12 times wealthier than their peers, according to the Path to 1555 initiative, a group raising capital to invest in Black businesses. Black businesses are crucial to social mobility, but they aren't receiving enough support, said Henry McCoy, a professor and director of entrepreneurship at the NC Central University School of Business. And during the pandemic, Black businesses were hit hard. More than 40% of Black business owners closed their doors in the early months of the pandemic. Many struggled to get aid from the government, like from the Paycheck Protection Program, which denied Black applicants more frequently than white ones. It's bad out there, McCoy said in an email. The inequities are enormous and growing between the races in entrepreneurship. Raleigh's numbers are similar to several other metro areas in the Southeast, which in general did better than other parts of the country and has a higher number of Black residents. In North Carolina, Black-owned businesses accounted for 4% of employer firms in Charlotte and 5% in Greensboro. In Fayetteville, they make up 11% of employer firms, the highest share of any metro area in the country. In the wake of the first few months of the pandemic, though, a new trend has given rise. A record number of people seem to be forming businesses. In 2021, new business filings grew to 178,300 in North Carolina, the largest number ever recorded, according to the NC Department of the Secretary of State. There is evidence of large upticks of business formations in black neighborhoods, according to research from the National Bureau of Economic Research. Many of those businesses are online microbusinesses, according to Brookings. Johnny Hackett Jr., owner of Downtown Raleigh's Black Friday Market, which creates space for black entrepreneurs to sell items, said he's seeing an increase in black entrepreneurship during the pandemic. There are way more than 1,061 black-owned businesses in Raleigh, he said in an email. In part, he said, it's because many black businesses registered for the first time or were historically undercounted. Hackett said there needs to be an increased focus on supporting these businesses. I don't know if I care to increase the number of black-owned businesses in Raleigh or to make them as evenly proportioned to other races. I think it's more important to better support the black-owned businesses we already have, he said, adding the local community needs to provide them access to working capital, invest in them, and promote them. Once that happens, people will move here to create black-owned businesses and will jump on the count data list, too, he said. McCoy believes there is a more pressing reason to support black businesses. America is becoming blacker and browner and on its way to becoming a majority-minority country, he wrote in a 2020 presentation. If the majority of a country has low, no, or negative wealth, then it's not only a problem for that population, but for the entire country. Investing in more black businesses and pulling down systemic barriers to capital, he wrote, could change that narrative. But if black businesses in the U.S. become functionally extinct and no longer play a significant role in the overall American ecosystem function, then there will be grave and negative consequences for the entire country, he wrote. The story was produced with financial support from a coalition of partners led by Innovate Raleigh as part of an independent journalism fellowship program. The NNO maintains full editorial control of the work. Next, Kmart is down to its last four stores in the U.S. On a busy stretch of Route 35 near Rahway, New Jersey, one of the nation's last Kmart stores looks like a relic from the past. Its big red K is faded and cracked. Inside, this most American of retail stores, popular for K cafe luncheonettes and blue light specials, a sign promotes 60% off clothing. A dining room table was on clearance for $89, while Route 66 jeans went for $10.99, and pink ladies' neck sweaters for $12.49. But a spacious parking lot was mostly empty, with a handful of bargain shoppers scurrying into the store over a couple of hours. Some came out empty-handed. A woman said her elderly mother walks the shopper-bearing Kmart aisles for safe exercise. She was checking on her. Another shopper, Grace Siloro, 69, said, I came here out of boredom. She bought two winter coats for her grandchildren. I don't know how they stay in business, she said, scanning the lot. Kmart blazed to American retail glory beginning in the early 1960s, seeking to dominate the discount retail sector with discounted national brands, a first at the time. At its peak in the 1990s, Kmart operated about 2,400 stores and employed 350,000 in the United States and Canada. Its brands once included Payless Drug Stores, the Borders bookstore chain, and Sports Authority. Now, with two Kmart slated to close, that will leave just four stores open in the United States, Kmart Death Watchers say. One is here in Avondale, a second is in northern New Jersey in Westwood, the others are on Long Island, New York, and in Miami. At one time or another, Kmart operated almost 40 stores in Philadelphia and its Pennsylvania, South Jersey suburbs. The last one closed in 2019. They were quite a happening in the 1960s and 1970s, said Fred Hurwitz, retailing professor at Pennsylvania State University. Kmart was growing like crazy. Shoppers would wait for Kmart employees to announce a blue light special or daily deals in specific departments and rush to see what they were, adding thrills to the day's experience. Hurwitz said that Kmart did well for 20 or 25 years, and then Walmart, with its efficient supply chain and reputation for low prices, drove it under. It's amazing to remember that Kmart started out the same year as Walmart and Target in 1962. Kmart had its day but wasn't able to define its market as clearly as the other two discounters, said Vicki Howard, author of From Main Street to Mall, The Rise and Fall of the American Department Store. Kmart didn't have the best bargains or style, Howard said, and if there is nostalgia for Kmart, it speaks to the current state of affairs in terms of the retail apocalypse. The Sears chain merged with Kmart more than 15 years ago under the hedge fund operator Eddie Lampert, who has turned their liquidation into a business plan. Both retailers filed for bankruptcy in 2018. Sears and Kmart stores operating under the TransformCo entity are still controlled by Lampert and have closed en masse in recent years, leaving valuable real estate behind to be sold or redeveloped. The last full-line Sears in Pennsylvania in Willow Grove is expected to close within weeks. But even as TransformCo shutters Kmart stores, the discount chain lives on in Reddit, YouTube, and Facebook posts with devout followers who are nostalgic or fascinated by Kmart's demise. A vast trove of Kmart videos lives on the Internet. Tour one of the last Kmart stores in the U.S. Chris Fitzwater, a 37-year-old from Warren, Ohio, holds just great memories of visiting the local Kmart with his great-grandmother and grandmother. They ate at the Cafe Luncheonette. He bought Nintendo 64 games along with football jerseys and sports cards. One day several years ago, Fitzwater decided to shoot video of the Kmart storefronts and interior still open. He'd hop in his car and drive for hours to find them. He has posted videos on YouTube. It was so much fun. When I started filming, there were Kmarts everywhere, said Fitzwater, who works in a chemical factory. Sadly, the Kmart of Fitzwater's childhood in Warren closed by the time he began to create his Kmart video archive. Kmart fans also connect at the Sears Holding Kmart and Sears Fan Group face page. On February 11th, Scotty Baker, 50, of Tacoma, Washington, posted Kmart's Thanksgiving sales flyers for 2012 that advertised a 42-inch RCA plasma television for $199 and a buy one, get one free deal for board games. Among his regular posts last week was raw footage video from late January of the last Kmart in Montana, which is slated to close. Ben Schultz, 23, was too young to have experienced Kmart's powerful hold on America retailing. Plus, he said, my family was more of a Target family. In his teen years, Schultz worked at McDonald's in a parking lot in front of Kmart. On my lunch break, I would wander around there, the Kmart, he said. There weren't as many people in there. Now, a graduate student in public history at the University of Wisconsin at Milwaukee, Schultz has become an expert on Kmart and the company putting together a spreadsheet and a map of every Kmart when it opened and when it closed, with the address and other information. Kmart absolutely reigned supreme over the retail discount market, he said. Their focus was to be America's discount store. They essentially wanted to have a monopoly over the industry, and it seemed like it was within their reach. Kmart, Schultz said, was to be so bland that nobody felt it was uninviting. It was a place that could be common to everyone. A Kmart Core annual report showed that the chain had revenue of about $37 billion in 1993, near the height of Kmart's popularity. But the discount chain's blandness became a detriment, Schultz believes. When they tried to change their image, they did not have an image, he said. When Walmart and Target came into the community, customers thought they were shopping with their kind of people. Kmart's store locator on the chain's website tells shoppers of open stores in each state, but it is often wrong. The web lists 5 Kmarts in New York, White Plains, Bridgehampton, Manhattan, and 2 in the Bronx, but the phones were disconnected or not in service at 4. An employee answered the phone at the Bridgehampton store far out on Long Island. There was a Kmart listed in Marshall, Michigan. No one answered the phone. Google showed it permanently closed. Kmart has 4 stores in Florida and Key West, Marathon, Key Largo, and Miami, the website says. Recent press reports say that Kmart will close Key West. An employee at the Kmart in Miami said that her store was the only one open in the state. The company did not respond to a request for the number of Kmarts still open in the U.S. Schultz believes there's a reason for the continued existence of the Kmarts in New Jersey and on Long Island. New York has had a strong stance against Walmart, so that has helped Kmart. We have run out of time for today's episode of Money Matters. I hope you enjoyed it and be sure to listen next time. I'm Pat Perry, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. Today's episode of Money Matters is underwritten by the Carter Glass Insurance Agency, serving the community since 1974. They can be reached at 919-781-1973. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Money Matters is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.